Hi, this is Heather Esposito, and this is Leadership by Design. Welcome to today's episode of Leadership by Design. Today's guest is Ryan Anderson, who serves as our Vice President of Global Research and Insights here at Herman Miller Group, where his team focuses on gaining and sharing insights to help Herman Miller customers thrive. Previously, Ryan was Vice President of Digital Innovation at Herman Miller. With over 25 years of industry experience, much of Ryan's work has centered on how technological and social changes have enabled new ways of working and living, and how the places we inhabit can support positive, productive experiences. Ryan regularly speaks about Herman Miller's research and has been featured in Fortune, The Wall Street Journal, Wired, Fast Company, NPR, the BBC, and beyond. Welcome to today's podcast, Ryan. Excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, so if you've been in sales, there are a number of people who are familiar with you because of your interaction with customers, but a lot of the organization may not know much about you. So can we just start with getting to know you a little bit better, your background and how you came into your role today?
Yeah, sure. Well, as you described in my introduction, I've been in the industry a while. I've had a couple of times where I've left it, but basically starting as a college student, I interned with another furniture organization. I was afraid that this whole sphere would be really boring, and I was actually shocked at how interesting it was, mostly because of research. You know, I had imagined that furniture people might sit around and talk about like, the wheels on chairs or the edge profile on a desk all day long. But in fact, the industry's interest in the future of how we live and work is what really captured me. So I spent a lot of years in marketing, in sales. I got more involved in new product development, which is what led me into research. I've always had a super strong interest in technology. I'm not a technical person, but technology has really been one of the kind of hidden invisible forces impacting our industry, not just in terms of how we do business, but in terms of the design of the spaces that we support. And so I spent a lot of years focused on technology and its impact on workplace. Left the industry, as I mentioned a couple times. I actually was with Herman Miller starting in 2012, left to go to a startup because I had always wondered what it would look like to work for a tech company. So I went to this amazing software as a service startup that we were growing like mad. We sold it to WeWork in 2018. After spending a little bit of time at WeWork, I was watching what was happening at Herman Miller, new CEO, very interesting strategy. And I was really excited to come back in 2019 and to jump into this role ultimately, and to think about how insights could drive our own strategy in addition to helping the customers that we serve. And I know it sounds cliche to say, but I love my work. I'm thankful for it every day.
Yeah, I love working here too. It's an amazing company, an amazing place to be. You shared with me as we were doing some of this preparation that you have led distributed teams before. And as we talk today, we're going to talk a little bit about the future of work, how we're thinking about that at Herman Miller, how our customers are thinking about that, what you're observing. And so I'd love to hear your experience that you've already been in this future of work in a prior role.
I certainly have gotten a chance to live some experiences that are becoming more common now. So I got really interested in this all the way back in 2005. I remember having this conversation with a customer who had recently built out a new facility in Minneapolis, and they called me with a very odd question. They said, "We're noticing that a lot of our cubicles are empty, and we're afraid that people don't like them." And I said, "Well, that's interesting. Tell me a little bit more." Well, we talked at length, but as it turns out, they were the first organization to fully deploy what they were calling wireless, but what we would now call Wi-Fi. And basically, they had given the chance for their employees to work in other places. And I remember thinking on this call, the workers have been freed. They've been untethered after 30 years of having to do their work in one place. And so for me, that got me going really quickly on, this is going to have massive impacts for the industry. And so when I came over to Herman Miller in 2012, I was leading our technology research, and we got a chance to partner up with the head of user experience at Skype. and look at virtual, look at remote, begin to try to understand what can be supported technologically, what can't be. We hired an applied cultural anthropologist to answer the question, can people really learn to trust each other on video? I think that was 2014 when we did that. And then I had an interesting moment. There was this guy who leads a consultancy in the UK who said, I'd like to debate you on whether or not physical work environments are necessary anymore, or specifically offices are necessary. And I was a high school debate geek in high school, and I love the process of debate. So in our London showroom in 2014, this guy's name is Paul Miller. He leads a group called Digital Workplace Group. We debated whether or not offices were even relevant in a world of, you know, rapidly advancing technologies. And one of the great things about being a high school debate geek is that you learn that you have to really debate both sides in order to be prepared. So he got me thinking in like very real ways, what would it look like if offices didn't exist? If we chose to close them, not because I think we should, but just hypothetically, what would happen? What would be the good things? What would be the bad things? I started looking at companies like Automatic and 37 Signals and Digital Workplace Group that didn't have any physical offices, and found that it is possible, but it also comes with a whole host of drawbacks. And it gave me a couple things. One was a much, I think, more nuanced understanding than I had had previously of why offices would be important in the future. But it also pushed me a little bit to say, am I really, as a leader, managing to what's possible as far as new ways of working? And as the years went on, I grew more and more passionate about having more distributed teams, not that they have to be in separate locations. So distributed work, by the way, is just that. It's just the spreading out of work. In 2005, with that customer, it was within their building, but distributed work can happen across the city or across the globe. And I got to the point where I found that my passion to have really diverse, interesting, talented team members led me to want to have teams that were more spread apart. It felt like the more I could look at including different, talented, interesting people around the world, the better we could innovate. I mean, that relationship is pretty clear to me. So I had to learn as a manager what it looks like to support a team that isn't co-located. And coming back into Herman Miller in 2019, I was working with a consultancy that provided me a whole group of digital innovation folks. One was in Sweden, one was in Beirut, a couple were in the US, one in Mexico. And just because of the nature of our work, we didn't get together very often, but we cranked out amazing work. It was very productive. Now, in that case, those were consultants, and so I didn't necessarily have to worry about the cultural long-term implications, cultural implications of not having that team spend more time together in a co-located way. But the shorter answer from the long one I just gave you is that for me, it's been like a 15, 16, 17 year journey to understand what might this look like. And how do all the places that we work in, whether it's our homes or offices or co-working spaces or coffee shops, how do they ultimately come together as an ecosystem to really support this?
Yeah, so you've been ahead of the curve. And for some leaders, not only within Herman Miller, but for external groups that listen to this podcast, this is a really new way of thinking if they've been used to being in the office 5 days a week prior to the pandemic with their teams. And even moving into the pandemic, there was still an equality of experience that we were all now remote. And so we had to figure out how to work together. This hybrid approach of some people may be in, some people may not. We may all be in together or we may all not. So there's some challenges that come with that. Let me start with the benefits first. What do you see as the benefits of really embracing and adopting distributed and hybrid work?
Yeah. And by the way, I'll offer up some definitions because sometimes
that'd be great.
The words get in the way. So as I mentioned, distributed work for me is the big meta theme, and it's been going on for 15 years. It's around work becoming more spread out. It's really been going on even more than 15 years, but most organizations didn't necessarily have a holistic strategy for supporting distributed working. They may have had telecommuting policies or travel policies, but for the most part, they worked under the decades-old assumption that if people needed to do their work, they'd come into the office and probably go to one specific place, which in the era of desktop computers was exactly what happened. But most organizations hadn't necessarily thought about supporting it in different ways. 2020 and the quarantine and the shared experience you referred to has gotten organizations thinking about supporting distributed working in different ways. Hybrid is one of those approaches, and we think it'll be the most popular. Now, I'll just touch upon this. There are still organizations that have a more binary view of the world, meaning their employees are either remote workers or office workers. They don't have choice between the two. And in some cases, that's appropriate. Other organizations, particularly a lot of leading well-publicized tech firms, are going with remote first strategies where they view home as the primary workplace for all their employees. They might supplement it with office space or co-working, but you know, they're doing that to go snag great talent around the world. So even if it doesn't feel right for an organization, they should imagine what it's like to have one of these companies come knocking on their employees' door metaphorically and say, hey, you can live wherever you want. We'll support you at home. Provide you a whole host of perks. But hybrid is a little distinct from either of those. It's basically saying we're going to give our employees choice and then we're going to offer them great choices. So you can work from the office or from home. You can work from a supplier's office or a coffee shop. You're at that point, you're deciding to empower your employees to make the best choices. It's very complex, by the way. It doesn't take long for an organization that decides that they're going to do this with some or all of their employees to realize they need to rethink HR policies, managerial methodologies, cybersecurity, space design, occupancy planning. Like, it is complicated. The upside has to do with the engagement of employees and the degree of an organization to create equitable experiences, which is why I'm glad you talked about that. We all had a very consistent experience in 2020, but its impact on people was highly, it was really disparate. I mean, some people loved the ability to work from home. Others were dying to get back into the office. The idea behind hybrid is that you decide that you can't find easy patterns for what makes someone better off in the office or home or a specific location. Job function doesn't determine your best location. And I think that's true, by the way. If you look at the myriad of factors that impact somebody's ability to work from a given location, it's the nature of their work, it's their team structure, it's whatever they're working on right now, it's their personal work style, it's their relationship with their partner, it's their Wi-Fi, it's, you know, is their dog going crazy with the Amazon delivery person? It's their physical, cognitive, social, abilities and limitations. And so ultimately, if you really dig into the complexities of this, it can almost leave you a bit exasperated to the point where you go, I'm not sure I know where anybody could do their work best, which is a good thing because it can lead you to say, then I'll let the employee decide. I'll give them choices. You know, it's not going to be a total free-for-all, but let's optimize their chances of being successful, being productive, being healthy. And that's a really good thing. And if we look at Gallup's data, even dating before the pandemic, the evidence, I think, is pretty clear that when you give people that degree of autonomy, they're more engaged, which has a variety of good results. Those that have fewer choices show higher levels of active disengagement. So the upside is that you can begin to really see what's possible for a team and to make the most of everybody's work experience. But it is a curve, and you're right. I had the good fortune of being maybe on this curve a little sooner than most. And there are some things that I had to evolve quickly as a manager. One, which is probably pretty obvious, but presenteeism isn't a very good way of managing performance, right? It really hasn't been for a long, long time. So you got to get clear on letting the team know what the goals of the team are, what each person's responsibilities are, making sure that they know not just their quarterly goals, but even at a maybe shorter term level, what they're really responsible for. And then you've got to empower them to go do that and get used to measuring whether or not they achieve those goals or not. That's an obvious one. Another one that really I think made a big impression upon me is you do definitely need to think deeply about communication. And when I say communication, I'm not just talking about talking or sending emails. I'm talking as much about listening and, in the truest sense of the word, being understood and understanding. And it's real easy for the communication methods that we use to leave people maybe with their voice unheard or risk miscommunication or bad assumptions. Like, you really have to be attentive to it and grow into what it looks like to be a team that effectively communicates. And of course, we also need to think about some degree of balance here. You know, when does it make sense to get together? Even remote companies have what they call onsites, which is the opposite of what we've always called offsites. They find deep value in getting their people together. In some cases, a surprising amount, maybe several times a month, or at least several times a quarter. So it isn't an all or nothing kind of situation. You really have to work through this stuff. And I'll tell you, Heather, I think the challenge for most organizations I talk to, and I've talked with hundreds in just in the last year, is that they're trying to fit 10 years worth of these conversations into 10 months. Yeah. I had the benefit of nearly a decade of working through some of this stuff largely on my own, which has helped. And certainly our research into these fields was extremely impactful to how I think about it. But we have to understand that this is going to take a little while, that for those organizations that pursue hybrid, that it's not something that you just tuck into a return to office plan. It's much longer term than that.
I've been madly scrambling notes as you've been talking, because there's so many things I want to circle back to. There was so much power in those last few minutes. Like you, Ryan, I don't know how many employees know this who listen to the podcast, but I am a remote employee, have always been a remote employee of Herman Miller. So the team I lead, I have two that sit in West Michigan and one that doesn't, and I'm not there. So the presenteeism thing was never an option into my leadership. So it's it comes easier for me because I didn't ever have that option to default to. But like you, I'm also a research geek. And one of the things that I found interesting in some of my more recent research is not just how important autonomy is, but that now that we have experienced a level of freedom and autonomy, taking that away actually creates more threat than if we would have never had it in the first place. So as we're thinking about helping our leaders navigate that, how can we be very cognizant of providing as much freedom and choice as possible and really as desired by each employee? Because some people want more direction. Some people want, tell me the outcome and then give me the freedom and how I get that done. So how can we be very cognizant of not creating a bigger problem because of what we're taking away than what we've been experiencing before?
Oh boy. I have so many thoughts about that. That's a fantastic question. First, let me just affirm how you've set this up, because we have seen this in our research, and Herm Miller is also a founding member of what's known as the Future Forum, which is a collaboration between companies like Slack, Boston Consulting Group, Fortune Magazine, and others. And the Future Forum has been focused on this as well, this notion of false flexibility or what may be coming. So the experience in 2020 during quarantine was remarkably consistent around the world. I got a chance to talk to employees at organizations in every continent for the most part, and their stories were so similar. And now there's a feeling that the next year or two will be highly disparate. There will be very different experiences, and it might not just be by region or by company, but even by team. And silence is risky. When there's nothing being communicated, employees can very easily begin to think the worst. And I've talked with some of our customers, as an example, who say, well, we're not really aligned yet at a leadership team level. And I often tell them, that's okay. Look at what Herm Miller's done in terms of saying, we're figuring it out. And so that would be my very first recommendation as a work team leader, is to say, we're going to figure this out. There's a bunch of complexity here that we're going to have to work through. But together, we're going to try to figure out how to work in a more flexible way that actually helps us to be more productive and more innovative. Because, by the way, I really do believe that this idea of hybrid working, giving people more choice, not just of where, but of when they'll do their work, And having more distributed teams, which might include people in other time zones, can actually speed up and accelerate how a team innovates and does their work. But it definitely is a journey. So right off the bat, I would acknowledge that. I would seek input from team members in terms of how they might like to go about this, how they might like to work. I would set some expectations in terms of the need for people to take more accountability over their own performance. Because if I look at the major macro trends, the power balance is shifting towards employees across the world. And let me tell you what I mean by that. It used to be that if you lived in a small town, or I live in Grand Rapids, and you grew up and you wanted a job, the really good big companies in the area were like your top choices. And you might have a few other choices, but they weren't as good. And then local economies became more diversified and people's choices expanded. But now that organizations are saying, you know what? We can hire from anywhere. And this is happening at scale. Employees will have more and more and more choice to work for a very wide variety of organizations. And it means that employers need to begin to get their heads around this idea of being more mindful of helping people to do their best in terms of being productive and healthy in their work. But there's, you know, with this freedom comes responsibility. The other side of this is employees that choose to work with more flexibility and maybe not show up to the office and have that autonomy are going to be held accountable to being able to meet goals in new ways. And if they just can't handle their responsibility, it's not going to turn out well for them. So this is, you know, this is a situation where there's a win-win that's possible. But I think as a team leader, having that communication with your employees, like, we're going to begin to offer you more and more autonomy and flexibility. My request to you is that we make sure that you step up and feel like you can meet your goals and that you do so. We want to make sure there's balance and that people aren't working like mad, because that is one of the, it's been known for many years, but there was always this stereotype that remote workers might be lazy, you know, watching Jerry Springer on the couch during the day. The data has supported for years and years and years that the opposite is much more likely, that they become super burdened with working very long hours. And that's particularly true if you happen to be in a time zone different than where your team or manager lives. So it's a matter of setting this balance. We're going to figure this out together. I'm going to need you to be more accountable, but we're going to continue to give you more autonomy. I don't want you working long hours and burning yourself out. Let's just figure out how to keep this on track. I will talk about one other thing, and I could just keep going down the list of factors for an hour. So I'll limit myself to this. But if you talk to organizations that do this really well, and if I look at some of my own experience in making this work, we have to get our heads around the idea of asynchronous communication, which is a term that people might be more familiar with when you start hearing about education, like K-12 education. A lot of teachers during COVID were talking about synchronous versus asynchronous. Synchronous is doing something at the same time. Asynchronous is doing it on your own time. Collaboration for years has been growing increasingly asynchronous. If you look at how music is made today, you get a couple of artists that do a collaboration to create a new song. They don't go into a studio with a bottle of Jack for a week and cut an LP anymore. Somebody's cutting some tracks in California. Somebody's doing it in London, in Nashville, and a producer is stitching this together using technology. That's happening with work too. It started with Google Docs and the ability to kind of co-create a presentation or a document separately. And it's not that asynchronous is always better. It's that a balance is best. In fact, there was a study done all the way back in 2010 at Wharton School of Business. Professor Ulrich and others did this little study where they brought students together. One group, they put them in a room, I think it was for an hour, and said, we want you to come up with ideas. And the theory was these students were going to all build on each other's ideas. It was going to be energy. The other group, they said, we'd like you to think about some new ideas for a half an hour and then come together for the last half hour and talk about them. That second group did far better because they had the chance to just process individually. And so when we start talking about hybrid working strategies and supporting distributed teams, one of the most important tactical things that a team leader can do is make sure they're not killing everybody with video meetings. Video is extremely intense cognitively to be on, to be trying to interact with a human being who really is a pane of glass 24 inches from your face. And there is no escaping it. Whereas asynchronous allows somebody who's either maybe has a different mental state for that day based on the work they're doing or different caregiving demands or other things going on in their life to find their time to think about it. So as an example, I just asked a group of collaborators to form a point of view on an important topic. I won't get into the specifics, but instead of scheduling a meeting, I sent out a chat to six of them and a blank Word document. And I said, can we do an asynchronous mind dump into this document? I would like your thoughts on this topic. Anytime in the next week, just open up this document and maybe respond to other people or put some thoughts in there. And we'll get together. We'll have a conversation about this. But I want to see what's in that document first. And we can noodle on it a little bit. And so in addition to what I said earlier from a team leader standpoint about kind of setting expectations and being willing to figure it out, being willing to make sure that you give people the chance to do their best thinking at the best times and that you're not just booking the heck out of them with video meetings is the other thing that I think is important to do right from the outset. And there are some great tools to do it. Sometimes as a team leader, you got to get a little bit of experience using these tools, but even just the channels for the Microsoft Teams, really easy place to start.
Can I plus one on what you just said and I'll raise you?
Sure.
Okay. So we, of course, we've been trying to experiment with some of that. I would say our team works 90% in shared documents for exactly the reason we described, but we recently were trying to do something where we wanted more ideation versus feedback and collaboration. And so we used a tool called Mural, which is an onboard online whiteboard, and it has private mode on it. So you can put provocative questions. And while we were in the ideation phase, we couldn't see what anybody else was doing. So each person could go in, best time, best thinking, put their ideas down. And when we came together, we turned it off. And the neat part about that was also seeing how much alignment there was, which let us know that there's something here because six people said the same thing and had brought some of the same things forward. And then we could also see where the unique ideas are. And sometimes I think we miss that when it's just live collaboration, because if I say, oh, well, Ryan's already said that, I don't need to say that again. I might put a comment like, I agree with this, but it was really cool to see that what you could do with this private mode feature.
It is. And that experimentation is so important. If I go back to my years of focusing on technology, people adopt new technology through play. It almost is always the case. It's very difficult to come up with some new tool and say to everyone, we got an important project, start using this tool. They'll all step away from it. So even on Microsoft Teams, I have a channel that I named Blackbriar because I'm a big Jason Bourne fan. And I will invite people to it and say, hey, if you've never really worked within a Teams channel, upload a document, post a GIF, do something silly. There's nothing to screw up and nobody is going to judge you for anything you put in here. And I think it's very effective. So Mural, Miro, Trello, these are all excellent tools to help with asynchronous collaboration. And if it feels overwhelming, you know, I usually just ask around and then I'll go play and I'll maybe even ask somebody else, hey, can you just kind of goof around with me in this platform for a little bit, see if it might work for us. I just did this actually with Trello with our team this week, which is basically like digital post-it notes. I absolutely love Trello, but it's really high pressure to throw something at someone when they're under a deadline, but to actually schedule an hour on someone's calendar, please play with this. People usually will react and come back and say, well, here's what I like about it. Here's what I don't. And that's part of this overall journey. And it's part of what we talked about earlier, just in terms of as a work team leader communicating, we're going to figure this out together. Like, let's just figure out what's right for our team. Let's learn from others in terms of best practices. Let's be cultural co-founders on a new way of working. But this is really important. I am not prone to hyperbole around changes in work or workplace because I've been to too many conferences where some schmo gets on stage and says, this is the most important crossroads in human history, because I'm making a speech. But I will say the significant acceleration of a dozen or more trends that happened in 2020, digital transformation trends, the way space is planned, hybrid working, it really is quite pronounced. And we are seeing the convergence of all of this. So those leaders that are willing to say, I'll jump in the mix, like I'll figure it out. I don't have to have this nailed down. I'll take a couple of years if it takes me this long, will ensure their own relevance, but also help the company to be successful in new ways. And we've got to really have to have a really high tolerance to say, well, that didn't work. But, you know, it's not like I'm quoting my friend Darren Murph, who's head of remote work at a company called GitLab. He always says, there's no one-way doors. You walk through the door and you go, this is wrong. Walk right back through and choose a different one. We have to have that kind of agility and forgiveness of ourselves, particularly those in very process-focused roles. Because I know when you're doing something at scale and you have very little tolerance for anything going sideways, it's very difficult to experiment. But because of the changes underway, we simply can't risk not looking at new and more important, I shouldn't say more important, new and more resilient ways of working in the future.
Yeah, this is a good place to plug a podcast I did, I think, 2 episodes ago with Sarah Devereaux. And if you're looking for it, I think it's called Inspire Impact, What is Safe to Try? And I loved that language because so many times you'll hear, you know, well, you know, what's safe to fail? Like what can you try that it's okay if it fails. And if you have a real fear of failure, it's still a little hard to get into that mindset. But that idea of what's safe to try, where the benefit, the potential benefit outweighs the risk. And to your point, like, let's take it as far as we need to see if it's working or not working, with the intention that if we see that it's not, we'll stop and try something else. And if we think it's moving in the right direction, we'll keep trying it until another decision point. I thought that was, it was such a great episode with her talking about that. And that mindset shift felt a little bit easier to swallow for some. What's safe to try versus safe to fail.
Yeah, I think so. And I love where you're going with that. What comes to my mind is there's been kind of a trendy buzzword for years called design thinking, which I don't use that phrase very often, but one of the tenets of it is, we should think about what it looks like to prototype and pilot something. Because as an example, when we think about designing a chair, we might have a design brief, we might have a desired outcome. It's not like there's one design or one engineering that we create and then we stick with it. We have to, in order to get it right, say, let's try this, let's try this. And when something doesn't work out, it's not viewed as with shame. It's viewed as like, okay, cool, what did we learn from it? How do we make the next one better? So it's a real tactical thing, but I think any team leader should be able to challenge their team in an effective way and say, hey, is there a new and better way we could try this? Try it, you know, in a safe, kind of contained way. Don't suddenly change everything you're doing at scale. And then, you know, really try to figure out if it doesn't work, how you respond. Can you say, hey, great job. I'm so glad we tried this. What did we learn? Can we figure it out for the next one? That for me is where design thinking got it right. And right now, as we think about all of these new opportunities to support work in different ways, I think every single person should try to have this mentality of, let's find appropriate ways to try new things. And when they go sideways, let's celebrate, because it should be leading us towards the next attempt, which should get even better. We used to have a sign somewhere in Design Yard that said, let's make better mistakes tomorrow. That was a pretty good time to revisit that one.
Yeah, this becomes, without using our words, you've been talking about so many of our leadership principles and practices. And what you were just talking about is, how do we choose to stretch ourselves over status quo? And what is safe to try? How can we celebrate that? Because that's a sign of a growth mindset. Which is embracing a growth mindset, is another one of our practices that is so important in an environment like this. Because as Sarah was talking about, in a time of complexity like we have, there aren't best practices. We've never done this before. We've never been here before. So really what there is our next practice. What's the next thing that we're going to try, which may become a best practice, but it's not a best practice yet because we've never been here. We don't know what's going to work best. So I loved the way she was able to bring the complexity theory in, because that's exactly what we're dealing with right now. It's what we're encountering. Mm-hmm. I also love the way I love the words we're using about guidelines and guardrails, instead of looking at this from a policy perspective. And as we've talked about that, the guidelines are really the mindsets. And to me, that's where the leadership principles and practices come in. The guardrails are the non-negotiables, the agreements that we make with each other, our team, so that we can function well in the distributed work environment. And I think our leaders are going to see that from the guidelines perspective, when we first introduced the leadership principles and practices, it was designed to be a framework of what great leadership looks like. And we support that, like, for leaders' development. And what we're starting to do now is say, yes, it's a framework for development, but it's also the lens for any business challenge you're facing. So as a leader of a distributed team who's working hybrid, how do I create clarity differently? You talked about setting the outcomes, setting the expectations. What are the roles? We may have to do that in much more explicit ways than we've done before. You were talking about coaching to possibility. We believe in the communication skill set. We have doubled down on coaching in the last year to democratize coaching within our organization, to really create a coaching culture, and to empower that as a foundational leadership skill. And the listening piece you talked about is so critical, because one of the things that we talk about in that program is it's ensuring that what I said is what you heard, and what you heard is what I meant. I'll say that again. What you said is what I heard, and what I heard is what you meant. Because 90% of the reason that conversations go wrong is you said something, and the definitions at the very beginning were a great example. All of our listeners could have completely different definitions of what distributed work is, what hybrid work is. So to level set, to make sure that we're not listening to this with 20 different sets of ears on, level setting with a consistent aligned definition is how I now make sure that what you're trying to communicate to me is what I'm hearing. And I just I was cheering in the background. You couldn't see me as you were talking about the importance of communication and conversation. Well,
and I should tell you, I mentioned I have the good fortune of talking with our customers and potential customers almost every day. And it has been a privilege to be able to share what Herb Miller's doing. Like, we don't get it all right, but there's a lot of things that we're doing right now that give me a lot of, I shouldn't use the term ammunition, but certainly a lot of great talking points to be able to help organizations think through what they're doing. The transparency and communication from our leadership team, been there, I think, very consistently, and people appreciate that. This idea of guidelines and guardrails actually has made its way into a guide on hybrid working that's coming out from Future Forum, that collaboration that we're a part of. Some of our change management tools that people haven't even yet seen, I'm already sharing with other experts in the industry who are saying, okay, that's really useful. So we are. I think we've got a lot going on. By the way, I'm also receiving coaching from one of our new coaches. I'm loving the experience.
Oh, great.
All of this is really important. We have to walk the talk, because I'm just going to sound like a real capitalist here for a second. But when you see this degree of change within an industry, there will be winners and losers. And we did pretty darn well compared to others in our industry throughout the pandemic, given our diversification into work from home and residential products and gaming and more activity-based work office environments. But if we're going to sustain competitive advantage, we better get real used to this, because we already know that there's just a shortage of good talent. It's a cliche thing to say, but just like with housing prices, it feels like talent shortage and housing prices are part of my conversations in my personal life, like every single day. And we really do need to get our heads around the idea that organizations will begin to come after our team members with some pretty great opportunities. We'll live where you want to live, work how you want to work. We'll give you a home office. We'll provide you a gym membership, a co-working space, whatever, particularly those organizations that are not focused on co-location. And so we need to assume that our employees will have the opportunities to go somewhere else at any given point. We've always should assume that, but now perhaps more than ever in an industry where there's such demand for people that can stay ahead of the rest. And so, we need to be taking advantage of all this is what I'm getting at. And have you ever heard the framework that Reid Hoffman was one of the founders of PayPal and LinkedIn, and he's got this wonderful podcast on innovation. He has this framework for different job opportunities called, well, he's got an actual name for it, but most people call it the Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia. So I'll give you it real quick, and then I'll tell you why I'm even mentioning this. But Reid Hoffman says there's different kinds of jobs and different kinds of rotations, he calls them. And the first one is, I'm just going to do a job. It's like a rotational thing. I've got a skill. They need it. I'll go do it. That's the Han Solo. I'm a pilot. I'd prefer to be a smuggler, but these people in the rebellion need me. Fine, I'll go fly for them for a while. The second he calls transformational, which is, this job is going to require that I grow into it. Like, I'm going to have to evolve personally in order to make this challenge work. And he calls that the Luke Skywalker. You know, Luke takes it on. He's not quite ready, but he's going to get there one way or the other. The third one he talks about is missional, meaning the goal of the job is almost perfectly aligned with my life's mission. And he calls that the Princess Leia. And he's got a podcast that's focused on a lot of founders of startups. So he talks about that a little bit. But I got to tell you, it feels like anybody who really wants at Herman Miller or beyond to fully take advantage of the next couple of years, if you're in a Han Solo mode, you better get Luke Skywalker pretty quickly, because we have to be okay with the idea that even, like, I've been in the industry 27 years, even those that have gotten pretty darn good at what we do, a little bit of reinvention is going to be pretty darn important, because there's simply too many factors changing in the world. And if we want to really maintain our leadership in the industry, that means we have to, at an individual level, look at how we can step up. And that's okay. We'll fail and have our own issues too. But I think the mindset's important.
That's one of our foundational guiding principles in the leadership work, is that organizations don't transform, people do. So the leadership development team that I have the privilege of leading, our work is to design transformational experiences that unlock leadership potential. How can we help leaders make those transformations that unlock that potential within themselves? Because new worlds require new ways of thinking, and what got us here won't get us to where we need to go. So I love that you bring that up. I love that model. And I think I'm like a combination of Luke Skywalker, because I love what's new. I love trying something I've never done before. And I do best when it's really aligned and personally connected to what I'm passionate about and what I feel like my purpose is in the world. So
awesome.
Can I do one of those, like, you know, one of those dolls that you like, you flip the clothes one way and it's one thing, and then you flip the clothes the other way and it's like upside, you turn it upside down and it's the other doll. Like, that's what I mean,
that's the fun part about these frameworks is none of them are, you know, all of them can be hybridized and changed in some form or fashion. I'm thinking of Kim Shomian and talking about managing polarities. So you're right. We have a little bit of each. And there are certainly tasks in my job that I don't love. And I might put on a little bit of a Han Solo. I just got to go do this. But yeah, there's other moments where it feels much more missional or much more transformational.
That's awesome. And that's what engagement's really all about. I mean, you don't have to convince somebody to be engaged when they're doing that kind of work. When they're on mission, on purpose, like, it's almost like you can't stop them. I know you like to be a little provocative and a little on the edge. So I want to use this opportunity to share what you're hearing out in the world through your global research and the insights you're generating. What are some of the most provocative ideas that you've seen for organizations or for leaders that are really trying to get this right and experimenting in some really interesting ways?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest and most provocative statement out there, which is probably an overstatement, but I still think it's worth considering, is that organizations that enable their people to work when, where, and with whom they want will outperform those that don't. And I know that was kind of a foundational conversation behind even the topic of hybrid or remote first, but like, to what extent is offering a really high degree of autonomy and flexibility going to help organizations in the long run? And I think there's really good evidence to indicate that when organizations get it right, that they're really tough to beat, because the employees, to your earlier point about engagement, the employees can invest themselves in a way that sometimes otherwise don't. But I also do think there's a certain point at which that goes too far. You can't have complete chaos. People do need those guardrails to understand at least some sense of what's appropriate. In terms of additional things in terms of being provocative, I think there's some really interesting questions around the role of organizational structure in the future. You know, I mentioned to you that I worked with a consultancy when I was doing some of our digital innovation work. What I didn't mention was that they use something known as the Hollywood model, which is, instead of having an agency with a bunch of direct employees, they've knit together a group of freelancers around the world. And when you go to hire an organization like that, you hire a producer, and then they go hire a bunch of other people to come into the project, just like in Hollywood, when you go to create a movie. Super hybrid, super fluid. I'm overusing the term hybrid now. Super fluid, networked group of people that have this sense of how to work together. But we used to call this swarm-based work. There's a few other terms for it. But the idea is that in some ways, these networks of people can come together for project-based work and get stuff done in a way that doesn't always require that they are employed long-term by the same organization. Now, that has its risk too, because then you don't have like this collective body of knowledge and you don't have a cultural epicenter. So it's not right for most organizations, but it's really pushing agility to the edges of what can be done. And it's easier in a function like that with digital than it would be in other types of work. But I think all of this is just worth understanding, because to our earlier point about managing polarity, it's good to see what organizations that are really pushing the edge might do, so that you can get a sense of where you might ultimately want to fall. I'm thinking of an analogy that Brian Chesky, the founder of Airbnb, sometimes uses. Sometimes he'll talk about an 11 or 12 star experience. And his story is that he has this group of people at Airbnb who, of course, want to provide great customer experiences. And they'll say things like, well, we could do this or this. And he'll say, well, is that a 4-star experience or a 5-star experience? Oh, that's a 4-star experience. What's a 7-star experience? Well, instead of just checking in and having a key at your Airbnb, there's a bottle of wine and there's like a personalized video from the host. What's a 10-star experience? Well, 10-star experience is you're going to have like a limousine driver waiting for you. You know, what's the 12-star experience? Well, it's Elon Musk with a Tesla that'll drive you to your space. And he does it because, as ridiculous as it sounds, the suggestions that the team made early on might suddenly feel maybe like they're not stretching themselves a little bit. So when we talk about provocative organizations, we talk about organizations that are completely distributed, they don't have any physical office environment, or they don't have any permanent organizational structure. Is it for everyone? Of course not. But it does push you a little bit into saying, what could we do, and maybe question some of our old assumptions to help us think about the future in new ways. And for a company like Herman Miller, it's really important, because we have a history of putting a point of view out there in the world around the future that sometimes even we have to live up to.
I love that stretching the thinking. I mean, that's one of the things that we do in coaching, is asking the types of questions that get the brain into a reflective space where insights can emerge. And like, it's kind of, I always make the analogy of working with a personal trainer. If you go to the gym and you go by yourself, you'll do what's comfortable. You may not put the 10 extra pounds on the machine. You may not lift the extra barbell, but if you're with the personal trainer, they'll say, no, today we're doing 15, or today I'm going to bump up the incline on the treadmill and you're going to run 0.2 faster. And it's nothing you would have done for yourself, but when someone else pushes you to stretch, you will. And so getting out that innovative thinking, I heard a company who did something similar to what you did in the leadership space. So leaders in the organization could kind of put out the initiatives they were working on and solicit talent. I don't know what the work structure was called, but they solicited for talent. And what they found was that was a great identifier of great leadership, because no matter what the projects were, people gravitated to the really great leaders because they said, if you spend time on this project, you will grow so much. This leader invests in you. This leader will teach you something new. They will give you opportunities to shine. And that was one of the ways they evaluated leadership, but it also gave autonomy to the employees to get the type of leader they want and to work on the types of projects that were going to really be fulfilling for them, which I thought was super provocative.
Awesome.
I know we're coming to the end of our time, so I just want to ask you one personal question, if that's okay.
Sure.
So one of the things we talk about, and you've mentioned it, that this is a journey. Leadership development is a journey. So what are you working on in your own leadership development right now? What's calling you to a higher level?
There's a few things. The biggest one, and it's something I'm working with my coach on as an example, is finding the right balance of time spent empowering and advocating for my team members and time spent on more individual work. Mm-hmm. I mean, the nature of what I do is that, well, I'll just be blunt. There's thousands or tens of thousands of companies and organizations out there trying to figure out the future. And talking to the head of research at a company known for research is a desirable thing. So if I let my calendar go, I would spend 40 hours a week talking with organizations about the future. And on some level, I might enjoy it. But that means that those individual demands might cause me to neglect the needs of my team. I had a situation a couple months ago where I was on a departmental call, and kind of spontaneously, I was asked to provide an update on a project that one of my team members was working on. Well, she's an excellent employee, super autonomous, doesn't pull me into the details of things. And I was excited to talk about the project, but I got at least three or four major details wrong. And later, in a very nice way, she said, hey, thanks for the update. By the way, did you know that these things are actually not the case? And I got really upset with myself, because what I realized was the gift she gave me was that I don't have to be dragged into the details of her work. But the disservice I did to her was that I didn't take the time voluntarily to go actually know enough about what was going on with that project to be able to represent it. And so I failed her. And thankfully, she forgave me. But I've been working really hard on trying to make sure that even if you do have a high-performing team that's autonomous and they're really well at being self-directed, it's still our job as team leaders to make sure that people are aligned on the vision, they've got the resources they need to go get their work done well, and that we're advocates and evangelists for what they do, not just the outcome of what they do, but how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't lived up to that. So I'm trying to be better about making sure that I get into the nitty gritty, and not in a way that micromanages, but in a way that really helps me to gain a much deeper sense of understanding of the work being done within the team, allows me to just be a better leader.
I appreciate your vulnerability in sharing that.
I screw all sorts of stuff up. Thankfully, my team, they're really good. And most of the time, if I listen to them and try to find a way of making what they want to have happen, our work comes out really well. But it definitely means that I need to dedicate time, literally like mark off time on the calendar. Do I know what's happening with this? And is there any way I can help it? And sometimes, the answer is we're fine. We're good. Don't slow me down. But other times, sometimes surprisingly, I might hear, no, actually we're hitting a few walls and you need to jump in and try to help with this. And if I wouldn't have really put time on the calendar to ask, I think they would have just found a way over the wall or around the wall, but I should be there helping to break those things down.
Yeah, I did something similar to you not too long ago. I was just on a roll, and I talked for them when they were perfectly capable of talking for themselves. And I knew it the minute I hung up and said, like, I stepped all over you, and I'm so sorry. I'm still working. I work on it every day, but no, it's a journey that's never complete. As soon as I pass this hurdle, there'll be a new one I encounter that I'm not even aware of today. So I appreciate you sharing that. All right, we also have four rapid fire questions. Are you game to play? Okay, great. Leadership is fill in the blank.
Ultimately, empowering others to go pursue the right goal in a way that allows you to be most successful collectively. And when I say right, I know this is rapid fire, but when I say right, you know, I work within strategy. Strategy starts with deciding what you're not going to do. So let's all agree on what we're not working on so that we can all rally around the right thing.
Yeah, I love that. A leader you admire and why?
Oh, there's so many. I should be better prepared for this. you know, there's a guy that I know who runs a local nonprofit who has taken an organization that was not modernized. It was really old school and has taken an incremental innovation approach. His name is Nate DeWard. And what I love about Nate is every day he makes something a little better. It's my tendency to want to overhaul the whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, let's just blow this up. He's the opposite. Every day, sticking with some vision, he makes something a little bit better. And when you look at the change over the years, he's transformed that place. So I need to learn more from him.
Yeah, Matt Tedesco, our AVP up in New York and our in Canada, he talks about 1% better every day. That's what he challenges his team to. What are you currently reading?
So I'm a complete history nut. I read 10 times the amount of history that I do stuff about the future, because I find that the stuff that I read about the future is helped by reading history. So I am revisiting one of David McCullough's books called The Greater Journey, which is about how a bunch of Americans that went to Paris in the 1800s transformed our country. But I will say that I recently finished the book Post Pandemic by Scott Galloway from Stern at NYU. And it was by far the best book I've read on how we can imagine the future post pandemic.
Oh, can't wait to try that one.
It's a little polarizing at times. So nobody at me, nobody send me a note. I don't agree with everything he said. It is just the most thought provoking. Let's dive into it with that mentality.
I love that. Yeah. It causes you to rethink, which is one of my most favorite books recently, is Adam Grant's Think Again and The Power of Rethinking. So.
Adam Grant is awesome. Oh, by the way, sorry. Galloway's book is post-corona. It's not post-pandemic. Post-corona.
Okay, post-corona. Great. And one last one. What do you love about your work? What do you love most about your work?
Total cliche, but I love the people. You know, I left Herman Miller. I came back to Herman Miller knowing that I would be surrounded by people who are invested in what we're doing, who give a dang about each other, who can be trusted. We've all got our issues, but I will say, having worked outside of Herman Miller at a couple different organizations, the commitment and culture of what we've got is something that I don't want to leave again. So that's what I like the most.
Yeah, it's pretty special. All right, well, thank you, Ryan, for joining us. This is the first in a series of support for our work team leaders and our employees as they navigate leading and working in distributed work and also returning back to the office. So looking for more to come. And remember, everyone deserves to have a great leader, so keep working at being the best leader you can be. Thanks for joining us today, Ryan.
Thanks, Heather. It was fun.
This podcast is an original production of Global Talent Management at Herman Miller Group. It's hosted by me, Heather Esposito, and produced in music by Sean Beck.